Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, that was one of the bigger episodes of Raw in WrestleMania season. A lot of dense talking segments, densely packed talking segments with a lot of places to go. Becky Lynch and Rhea Ripley with Dom having a pretty epic segment that could be the A topic on our show. It's a tough call with what happened with Rock and Cody. But I want to start by going back a couple hours, not use a recency bias with the big Cody Rock brawl, and talk about that compelling CM Punk, Drew McIntyre, Seth Rollins exchange that went about 21 minutes and just had an edge to it. It's a fun segment where, as Seth said, Drew and Punk were trolling each other, but it sort of had a vibe of, ooh, I wonder if they're improvising. I wonder if they're really pissing each other off. And whether they are or not, those are the fun segments, like Daniel Bryan and Miz on Raw Talk or whatever it was back in the day, where I was just like, man, are they really going at it? No, they were smiling afterwards. With Punk, you never know, how much is being said to try to actually get under his skin, but how much of his body language is him getting a little irked or he's just playing into it. But I was engrossed. I love that segment, and I think it was good for business. It got Punk involved in the match he's originally going to be involved in, because he'll be on commentary for the Seth Drew match, and it let Drew shine on the microphone. The line about him ironically being straight edge, not drinking, not doing drugs, but spending most of his life in rehab, I think was the line of the segment. Punk saying, I never have to put another man's name on my own t-shirt to sell it, aimed at Drew, was a close runner-up. I thought that was a lot of fun. Javier, I'll throw it to you. What's your reaction to that mid-show segment with those three?
So you want me to just get my anti-Punk bias out of the way, right?
I want you to be as objective about performances as possible, but if you think tonight fed into your rationale for being anti-Punk,
It did a little bit. You mentioned they go off script. There's like one specific thing that I'm like, there is no way that Punk got okay with this, other than I think he swore and some things where he went where he was saying some stuff that like Drew has no comeback for. The whole thing about when Drew says I'm the chosen one and then Punk shots back with chosen by whom? Say his name. What paragon of virtue? I believe those words. His words are close enough to him.
Yeah.
Chose you, and I'm like I mean, if someone fed him that line and gave him that line, that person should be in trouble. But going that, like, what's Drew supposed to do there? And there was kind of a disconnect there where Drew kind of had to let it sit for a second and then go into what was kind of obviously scripted. Because I think that's where it led into the either into that rehab line or something afterwards. But that was one of them. And the other one was talking about how Seth Rollins he wears platform shoes. Basically, he implied that. Some stuff like that. And he kind of and the way he approaches Drew, it's like, Drew, the way they've built him up, Drew should, I'm like, Drew not attacking him goes against the character that Drew is.
Yeah.
Because, he really, that's both a positive and a detriment to Punk. So, but that happens a lot with me, with Punk. If I see him, he says some stuff and I'm like, okay, this guy should just deck him at this point. And he can't because it's not in the script, So he kind of likes playing around the edges, and he ends up looking good, for himself to look good, and I don't want to say bury his opponent because that's too harsh of a word, but put him in a more negative light than what you would want him to be. And I know it's like he talked about him. He talked about Reigns. Reigns, when he's on his way down, I'm sure I'm going to see him on the way up.
Yeah.
Kind of implying that it's like, oh, yeah, we know what's coming up after Mania. So a couple lines there that I'm like, yeah, I didn't really sit well with me. outside of that, it just makes me feel so much better when they fire back at him. When Rollins came out, this is my favorite Rollins since I think he you know really shortly after he showed up with AOP. I think it's been you know downhill ever you know not downhill but like lower ever since. I thought that him firing back at Punk, I think he had a couple good things there too. And yeah, and Drew McIntyre, who's like I think the best babyface in WWE right now. I mean he's saying all the stuff and I'm like man you know because I've been vocal about like ever since that WrestleMania, bro. since that WrestleMania, where he should have won against Lashley. I've been on talking about Drew, and I'm like, you know, I'm like he snapped like I did. So very you know positive, and with that one, particularly the toying with the whole Vince McMahon thing, I don't think WWE want that in people's minds right now, particularly heading into WrestleMania.
And it's exactly the type of thing Punk would just wouldn't be able to resist. Now, that said, you know, Punk talked about how, you know, I mean, he has his issues with Vince, but he, you know, also was a guy texting with Vince at 3 a.m. And, you know, he just wanted, like, I don't know. I don't know where Punk's heart is at when it comes to drawing attention to Vince and whether he feels that's fair game in a place he wants to go. I think there's not a lot of people left fearing Vince McMahon. So it's kind of interesting, you know, when someone loses their power, how then they start to find out how people really feel about him. And Vince might be isolated enough not to know that's happening, but maybe not. But anyway, that's all. Now you got me off sidetrack. Psychoanalyzing the Punk Vince relationship.
Yeah, but it's less even you know that's even less than anything more than like what is the you know parent company going to think about?
Right.
Hey, you know we can't you know we're distancing ourselves already enough from them. So, you know, why kind of toy in that gray area? The good thing is that it's not something that people who are, like, not really in the know would know, but still, you know.
Yeah. We'll hear probably if the Vince stuff was scripted, if anything was scripted or unscripted, maybe. Sometimes things are scripted and then they want to tell you they weren't, too. You know, they want to leak word, even, like, all the stuff that happened with Punk and Seth and Drew and all that. And it was like, okay, we're going to pretend it's real. It's like nobody could really, you know. There were things that were caught things that were noticed that kind of unraveled that attempt to do a shoot, a work shoot pretty quickly. Overall, though, I mean, just compelling stuff. It's great to be in Chicago where Punk's going to get cheered no matter what if you're Seth. Because if you're in a neutral city and fans are choosing Punk, that hurts your brand. But in this case, it's just like, I know I'm the away team. You know, I mean, and that's fine. So there's no harm in him and Punk going at it and fans choosing Punk. Obviously, I think Seth would feel bad if he's a full-fledged babyface feuding with Drew, and then they go to, you know, Oklahoma City or Georgia, you know, Atlanta, and then the fans are all on Punk's side too. But in this case, it just was fun because you knew the crowd is going to be with Punk no matter what. Drew's great, you know, just kicking back from a distance, you know, feet kicked up. You know, sitting cross-legged on the table also at different times and kind of pelting and picking his spots to get in some shots. So good WWE television that just sort of walked that line. And it's been that way with Cody and Seth and The Rock and Roman too, where you're like, you know, okay, they might say with a straight face, oh, that was all the work, but they're actually – trying to get under the skin of the person who they're targeting. But they know that the other person won't complain because they have too much pride. And so in some of that stuff happened with Rock and Cena years ago is, you know, has now been, you know, verified. So, yeah, I mean, in the end, I just think a match that I wouldn't say Seth and Drew felt cold because Drew has been so good. And I think Seth's been solid. But you had Punk on color commentary and, you know, just him being in the vicinity of this match and that segment overall. And, you know, they ended on the note of you know, the wrestlers involved getting in a fight, you know, physicality, as WWE says, between the wrestlers who are actually in the match, which I think was a good note to end on, too.
Well, and I gotta hand it to Seth for this one, because when he came into the ring, he said, you know, hey, you guys are making these deals and I'm the champion. But he didn't come across to me in any way that – he was like, hey, I'm the champion, and you guys are not talking to me. It felt like, hey, I'm the champion, and this is, you know, and I said things. He felt more, this is the first time it kind of felt like this feud is actually happening. Because yeah. So much of what Seth has been doing is being writing a shotgun with Cody against Rock and Reigns. And they've been kind of playing that off with, with McIntyre being upset. It's like, hey, am I sucking potatoes? And, that was kind of like, so they've worked that into the story, but this is the first time it kind of feels like Seth Rollins' eyes are actually on this actual program, which is something I was worried about heading into it. Similar to, mm-hmm. I was worried about, because it really feels like it's more Cody versus Rock
mm-hmm. yeah.
Cody versus
yeah.
Reigns. Although yeah. they did a good job last week, like reminding you, with Reigns is not with Rock, reminding you, okay, well, I want to see this. Then today they kind of
whoops.
It's weird because thing is that it doesn't feel like it's one feud. It's more like he's feud with two different people, and they're both two compelling feuds at the same time. But it's odd WrestleMania.
As upset as Cody legitimately was and had every right to feel about Rock and the executives and the powers that be, initially screwing up his journey and the story that was being told, I mean, he's going to end up better off because of the little detour back, away and then back onto the path to a one-on-one win over Reigns at Mania, presumably, because there's obviously going to be a Rock-Cody match before Rock turns babyface. I mean, and assuming that's even, on the horizon, I think a lot of people assume it is. In fact, I even thought when Rock said, whispered something to Cody at the top of the show, it crossed my mind, is Rock going, something like, you're going to have I promise you a fair fight at WrestleMania against Roman or something like that.
I still think Cody
lay the foundation that I definitely want to hear that. Because I'm thinking Cody's response was it's a promise Rock can't back up. And I'm like, well, that totally fits, my little conspiracy theory that Rock saying you'll get your fair fight that you want. But by the end of the show with the bloody beatdown and the stuff with Cody's mama and the blood on the belt, I'm like, I don't know how you reconcile those two things. So over to you, Javier, for that.
Yeah, it was the exact same thing. My thought was actually, I promised Dusty I'll take care of you. That was kind of like what I was thinking.
Yeah,
something along those lines. Yeah. It's like how are you gonna do that? I agree with you that that ending and leaving him bloody and messed up and the attack at the end. It might just be that I've been watching way too much Japanese anime lately. Sometimes that does happen where it's like for the greater good, I'm gonna have to break you down and destroy you,
mm-hmm.
And it's like, look, I know I'm going to do some horrible, horrible stuff to you, but I got to sell this.
Yeah.
I really got to sell this. And then at the end of the day, we're going to get like something, something good, something good out of it. It's funny because I was listening to a podcast about the the idea of the Dune storyline, since that just came out in theaters recently, where, at the end of the day, spoiler alert for a novel that's very, very old, in 3, 2, 1, end of the day, the main character has to make, who can see the future, has to make a decision that is going to lead to horrific consequences in the near term, because it's the only way, in the long term, that it's going to solve. Or another example I'm going to use is Avengers, where, Doctor Strange is like, there's only one way we get out of this. And then, all this horrible stuff happens, but at the end of the day, it was the only path in that direction. I think that might, you could use that story to explain why The Rock, just went as far as he did, in beating him up. So I know some people are not going to like that, but I think it's just I've seen so much Japanese anime lately, and that it's something that I'm used to.
Well, I took my headphones off because I finally watched the first Dune last night, and I'm going to watch the second. So I just heard you talking in the background while I took my headset off for whatever spoiler you're giving away during a new release of a movie that people haven't had a chance to see yet. Shame on you.
I really couched it in very blank.
Yeah, well, fair enough. And
I did pull back on that without actually,
Yes.
I mean, it's a spoiler, it is a spoiler, but not like spoiler,
Well, we'll let people decide.
Yes.
with their wrathing.
I counted down. Let people,
you know. You did it. Not everyone can, hit the mute button on their,
God, I hope nobody ran off the road.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I know. Yeah, someone bought their tickets. They took tomorrow off from work. They're so excited to go see it. They avoided. They didn't read the book. And all right. Anyway, enough fun on that. We got so much to talk about. Yeah, Javier, let's pause. Let's introduce ourselves and let's get to phone calls. We have an on-site correspondent lined up. Emails are coming in. Obviously, peak season for WWE and peak season for shows like this with so much to talk about. Although post-WrestleMania shows are a blast too when things kind of get reshuffled. And frankly, now with all these stadium shows and big names and who knows what's going on with The Rock after Mania, I don't think there's going to be a particularly big drop-off, especially with Punk being healthy and coming back. But whole other topic. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, March 25th, 2024. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show. I founded the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter when I was a teenager back in 1987 and have done it as my job even during college, but as a full-time job since the day I graduated college and continue to be passionate about analyzing, reporting on, trying to figure out on-air, off-air stuff going on in pro wrestling. And it is a blast to do so in this format, especially with the interaction with callers and listeners and an array of great co-hosts. One of those great co-hosts is Javier Machado, and he joins me today. Javier, welcome back to the co-host chair here on Raw post show.
Yeah, I haven't done Raw in quite a while.
Yeah. Well, really good to have you. I'm excited to continue to talk about this show with you. So much more to dive into, and it'll be great to hear from our callers, too. If you want to be one of those callers, all you have to do is call us, and that number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. If you call and you want to be on the show, push 1 after calling. That'll flag you on our switchboard. You can also call and just listen and decide if you want to join in as the show progresses. That's up to you, of course. You can also email us if that's easier for you. WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. I know a lot of you watch the show, don't listen to our live stream right afterwards. You got other things to do, but your way to be part of the show is to email us during Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, or Collision, and then you can listen back the next day and see if your email made it on the air. WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. That's at gmail.com. I think that is all. So let's just roll here. We got so much to talk about. I want to go to David in Pennsylvania first. David, you are first up. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, guys. Appreciate taking my call tonight. I'm not a diehard wrestling fan like I used to be years ago. But obviously this time of year is when everyone kind of gets more into it because of WrestleMania coming up. And I have to say, I mean, I only saw a couple segments. I saw the opening segment. I saw the Punk segment, and then I saw the ending, and to me it reminded me a lot of the storylines they did back in the day when they had so many great superstars and that the casual fans really were into and things like that. So I think this storyline with The Rock being the final boss is really interesting, because what will that lead to down the road? Will he stay heel? Will he go back babyface? And I think to me, it's sort of it's Rhodes has kind of got in a way it's got to overcome the odds like Daniel Bryan did years ago at WrestleMania. And I just think CM Punk, I thought the Jim Cornette references were incredible. The Vince McMahon one, I knew that's what he was getting at when he referenced McIntyre there. I thought that was interesting. I like Punk because he blurs the lines between real and fictional, and that's what's great about his promo. So, I hear your thoughts on that. I had a really cool night, I thought, from what I saw.
Cool. Thanks, David. I want to let listeners know we did hear the distortion in David's call also. I didn't want to interrupt and just make things worse by drawing attention to it, but we were able to pick up on what you said, David, pretty well. Javier, what do you think about that? Kind of comparing this to past eras, this type of show that might pull somebody back in who strayed a little bit, the lapsed fan as it has become known.
Yeah, it's funny because I was actually thinking that at the end that the beatdown and the way that The Rock was approaching things felt like not, I mean, like old school era, like not, you know, like, beat, you know, not attitude era wise, but like, you know, I could totally see like Ric Flair doing this to somebody, you know, that kind of beatdown and, you know, and, you know, how he played to the camera as it were, you know, Mama Rhodes and stuff like that. I thought, you know, the way that they told the story felt like old school, you know, wrestling to me. Just, you know, with a new coat of paint. So I really, you know, it almost feels like this is like what Cody's been building up to because he's a fan of that, and like it feels modern as opposed to feeling old. And yeah, I think it does call back to those eras a lot of the stuff that they're doing lately.
Yeah, yeah, that's good stuff. What was the Cornette reference?
I'm not sure.
David, you're sounding a little garbled, but I'll throw back to you for any follow-up. And what was his reference to Cornette? I missed that.
Oh, yeah, okay. So can you guys hear me now, or is my phone better?
You do sound better, yep. It actually was bad, then good, then bad on your first comments, and now it's back to good. So hopefully it stays that way.
Okay, good, good. Yeah, I was just right there back where I live. So,
now you're getting bad again, but we can hear it.
Okay, so Punk referenced, they talked about Pat McAfee, and Punk was kind of interacting with him kind of casually, and he goes, I'm a big fan of the drive through and the experience. And I
David, I appreciate hearing from you, and I hope you'll call again. Hopefully the connection will be better. I do have to pause or end the call there just because it was getting tough to listen to. But some good comments, and I mean, I like hearing somebody who loves pro wrestling be excited about pro wrestling coming out of a show, any show. You know what I mean? It's like you want a good product where you're into the characters, and to me, like, what was nice about that segment is, you know, you're watching it thinking, okay, this is not tightly scripted. And you have even people like talking over each other, you know, like Punk stepped on Drew McIntyre. He didn't wait for him to finish. And some of the body language look like, oh, is that really getting under his skin? You're like, that's fun stuff. But they didn't go like all meta. It wasn't, you know, if this is my judgment of like a really good promo that strays into, ooh, was that real or not, is that they didn't actually do anything that wouldn't be said if this world weren't entirely real. And they don't say anything that runs counter to promoting their character and their match and does actual damage, unnecessary damage, as opposed to just trash talking to someone else in the segment. And I think copy of this, check those boxes. They didn't stray from storyline. If this world was real, that's the type of thing that would have been said. They didn't you know, talk about, oh, and you're whining backstage about not being about the match. You're whining backstage about how the finish to your match is going to be booked again, aren't you? Like, you know, that stuff you would hear, you know, in some of the worst moments of TNA or whatever, you know, like, oh, you know, that kind of thing. And this just was storyline driven, but it felt real and brought what people know are at least at some point some real tension between some of these people and put it in the context of building a match.
Yeah, it's just a couple. The thing is that some of the stuff he says kind of like really gets to places where, like, if you were to respond, you'd be getting deeper into the weeds of the stuff you don't want to like get into. Like, you know, an example would be like the count, because like the counterfeit Bucks thing back in AEW. You know, like the Bucks couldn't respond to that because there was like other stuff going on. So, you know, that kind of thing that he knows which buttons to push that someone can't really push back because that could be seen as escalation and likely get the other person in trouble, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, because it's the other person who's going to go like that one step beyond. I agree with you if like everyone were playing by the same rules, you know, but because the stuff that Drew said definitely felt more scripted in terms of like, you know, like when you mentioned that, you know, he would talk over Drew had to then work his way back to where the script was, where, you know, if everybody were like, okay, just go with it, then it could just even get messier, which it might be a good thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not saying, you know, I'm for less scripting and let people more go off on their own.
If they're good enough to do it.
Yeah. You know, and I think Drew is, cause like his sitting down was that felt ad-libbed. Because when he sat down cross-legged and the camera guy came around and he goes, don't shoot up my kilt, you perp.
Yeah.
That, because I know he could ad-lib. It's almost something you could tell, in particularly in like him and I think Becky's another one you could hear, that when they ad-lib, they kind of feel, it might be, you could hear it in that kind of their voice. And then, like, you know, there's like a difference between they're ad-libbing and they're not. So that felt like an ad-lib while, you know, you could kind of see he's trying to get back into the scripted portion of the program.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool stuff. Okay. Let's take another call and then we might get to our on-site correspondent right after that. I noticed he just called us up. All right. We'll stay in PA here and go to David, who's next in line. No, we already went to David. I'm going to Chris in Pennsylvania next. Sorry. Chris in Fairview, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the show. What's in your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Javier. Thanks for taking my call. To say, Javier, you made me sweat a little bit when you started getting into potential Dune Part 2 spoilers, and I had to put my phone down and walk away for about 30 seconds. Definitely looking forward to that movie and thought, oh, have I waited too long and now a big thing's going to get revealed. So I'm glad that I missed
it. I already shamed him for it.
Yeah. To be fair, I have not watched the movies because I only read the books, and I'm like, I'm at the point where I don't want to see movies. So I'm going off the books, so not, you know.
That's not nothing. Okay. That's, you're not helping your case.
I know.
I took my headset off, too, and didn't listen. So.
I should have definitely, because I just thought of the Avengers too late. You know, and
I'm just going to run elevator music from The Fix over that whole thing, Javier, just save everybody's stress.
I'm perfectly fine with that.
Okay, good.
Because afterwards, I made the Avengers reference. That should be okay. Cause
Yeah, my vote goes to elevator music, too. But going first to that Drew Punk and Rollins segment, that's probably one of the realest segments that I've seen in quite a while on WWE television. Very authentic, and I agree with what both of you were saying. They weren't waiting perfectly for each other to, like, finish talking. They were jabbing at each other, talking over each other. It felt very much not 100% polished, and it felt very real, and it wasn't scripted. Do you think at this point that this storyline with Punk and Drew and Seth has the legs and can extend all the way until SummerSlam? I'm hoping that Drew eventually wins the title here, but now with Punk hopefully back, I don't know, weeks, maybe a month or two after Mania. I don't know what his recovery timeline is. Do you think that they could be building to a really big triple threat at SummerSlam, which I'm usually not a fan of? But I have to say, just from watching them tonight, that they sucked me in. I was watching and waiting for, you know, every new barb and every new rebuttal they had for each other. If that were a potential main event, I'm probably attending SummerSlam this year. I guess, what are your thoughts on what's coming after Mania and if they could be building to that triple threat at SummerSlam?
Javier, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd really rather not a triple threat, and, you know, maybe to resolve their issue beforehand, and then whoever's left wrestles at SummerSlam. But yeah, that likely, depending on what CM Punk's health is, that's probably likely what's going to happen. And there's also the question of if Priest gets involved in any way, shape, or form, since he still has that Money in the Bank.
Yeah, from a standpoint of WrestleMania is giving you some good matches, but there's, in the WrestleMania build, they're building up other matches people want to see that are money matches, Chris. I think this is like, I don't remember a WrestleMania where that's been happening as much as that's happening here.
Yeah, I agree. They're laying a lot of breadcrumbs for what could be coming after. And I can't remember the last time they were already starting to set up post-Mania with 2 weeks or 12 days left until actual WrestleMania night one. And, I mean, this is something, I don't know if you could attribute it to Triple H and his booking and what he's been doing in the last year and a half. But so far it's very intriguing, and it's going to make me kind of stick around and watch more of the shows after Mania is over. I guess going towards, I thought the entire show was fantastic. I agree with Dave from PA. I thought that storyline and those hints of the bloodline potentially having something cooking, for lack of a better word, at the end of the show. I thought The Rock and Cody getting physical, I thought that was the next step that was needed in this storyline. Wade, this is, I guess, more for you, because I know that the last maybe 2 weeks and some of The Rock's recent appearances, and I've agreed that The Rock hasn't really come off as that dastardly heel and maybe not vicious enough. Do you think, as well as Javier, do you guys think that The Rock and the writing, whoever else was involved, do you think this segment and the end redeemed his kind of villainous persona and showing that kind of more vicious side? Do you think it has taken a really good logical next step here with what happened at the end of the night?
I thought this was a really good course correction. I mean, I think this is what Rock needed is, I mean, I like that he showed up unannounced, especially because he said nothing to the crowd. It would have, you know, people would have been upset and it would have left a bad taste in their mouths. If they're like, we only get his ring entrance, but we don't get to hear from him. And it just lets people know, hey, any episode of Raw or SmackDown, you never know who's going to show up. There's going to be some people going, it was dumb not to advertise Rock. And they didn't, right? I didn't miss some late plug for him, did I?
I didn't see anything.
Yeah. No, I mean, maybe there's some leak or something, but he certainly wasn't like the main part of the hype for any time.
Well,
and
Punk was the main hype, I think.
Exactly. So I think there'll be some people, you know, bean counters who look at things in kind of a small way, going, oh, anytime Ross on the show, you got to advertise him. But that's going to pay dividends for like months and years. Like, I got to tune into Rock because you never know who's going to show up who's unannounced. So I like that. And then yes, what he did last week. Or the Memphis, you know, guitar show back was that a week and a half ago now? It felt counterproductive. You know, he wasn't actually trying to get heel heat. I mean, he went through the motions at the end, but there were rocky chants. You know, he sabotaged his heel heat by needlessly playing up how much he loved Memphis. And when you go heel and you want heat, you say, hey, it used to be great to come to Memphis, but now it's a plank hole, you know, whatever, you know, you don't have to insult the city, but if you think you're going to get cheered, you can do something to turn the fans against you. And he didn't. And so it was all over the place. It was entertaining. It was masterful performance. Very few can pull off, but it also was counterproductive to the story they're telling. Tonight wasn't. This was, I mean, I actually thought the beatdown, I think they could have used one less minute. it felt stretched out a little bit. Like they had a little more time to fill than they wanted, but overall, I mean, yeah, that is heel heat by Rock. Yeah, go ahead, Aubrey.
They had to frame Rock's vodka in the center of the shot for like a few seconds, didn't they?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming that's his vodka, right? His vodka
brand,
the back of the truck. I mean, that was a while. I'm like, I see what you're doing here.
Yes. So, yeah, I mean, Javier, what did you think of Rock's Memphis singing performance? Do you agree with me that it had elements that were good, but it wasn't a sincere effort to get heel heat? It was a sincere effort to show how entertaining you can be. And tonight was, okay, now we're in the business of trying to get booed and sell a match.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they thought that he was going to be more of a – that they wouldn't be able to do – turn, you know, have him, like, the crowd get behind him as a heel in Memphis. Maybe that was their thinking, because he was playing it up like, you know, oh, yeah, I hate everywhere else, but, you know, I'm from here. So, you know, which is, you know, or my origins are from here. That was weird in that respect. Almost like when, what's his face? Wow, I haven't talked about him in a long time. MJF, you know, in Long Island, you know, that kind of thing. It almost had that feel to it, which, you know, just like in AEW, that was kind of productive. This is also, you know, was kind of productive of the Memphis thing. But yeah, I mean, he came across as like, okay, it felt like things just got real, assuming that they are real, because I'm still not sure if they are. Based on our early conversation,
Exactly. Yeah. Chris, any follow-up? Anything you want us to respond to, or anything else you want to bring up?
Not really. I guess the only other thing I noticed, and I guess this was one of the other major segments with Becky and Rhea, and kind of their escalation of the feud and them getting physical with, you know, Dom, of course, getting punched in the face, which I love that slow motion replay that they've been doing a bit. That was not only, I think, very innovative, but I loved seeing that, got a laugh out of it. I continue to agree with some of the callers and some of the co-hosts over the last few weeks. Becky's character just comes across so bland and uninteresting right now. Like, obviously she's trying hard. Her passion is there, but especially when she's standing in the same ring as Rhea Ripley, I don't know, she just comes off as, I don't know how else to describe it, but kind of just less than, and like her character has become so very cloying, and she tries to, you know, and it's very heartfelt and her emotion came through, but, you know, talking about her daughter and then talking about her dad, and again, emotional, but it didn't feel like it was maybe the right setting or the right time. And I don't know if that's just her, the script writers, trying to go to that to get more of a response from the crowd. It didn't hit with me. I just thought it was maybe not pandering, but the word would be cloying. Did you guys think the same when you were watching that segment? And also, do you think anything, hopefully Becky doesn't win the title. I never thought I'd say that. You know, I wouldn't have said that, four years ago. But I really hope she doesn't win at Mania. But do you think there's anything they can do post-Mania to heat her back up and somehow get her back to where she was, besides giving her maybe some extended time off to recharge?
So I've been less down on – I feel like Becky has been more a victim of circumstances than having done anything wrong. And I think that she's been – good in her attempts to continue to be the man with that kind of Conor McGregor bravado and not doing, oh, woe is me, why aren't the fans behind me anymore, and trying to figure this out. Like every time she's on TV, it's just, I feel like all she's done is spent a week thinking about and consulting others on how to try to steer this back in the direction it needs to go in. And I thought tonight was actually a good attempt at that. You know, pulling up, you know, my dad didn't get to see me be a mom, and I'm more proud of being a mom than anything. I mean, who's going to boo that, right? So you can say that was like, you only go there when you're really, really, really thinking nothing else is working. But I thought the thing that I thought was strongest is just her saying, Rhea, you've never experienced going from, you know, the shiny new toy, the hot new thing, the whatever, you know, the chosen one, to having to battle when you've been around long enough that you're not. And I think that might have, I don't know if maybe making fans feel guilty is overstating it, but maybe recalibrate a little bit. Is that what we're doing? Are we just into Rhea Ripley, but Becky doesn't deserve this, and cause fans to rethink it a little? I thought this was a good a good segment for her. And I thought it was smart if their goal is to get Becky Sheeran and Rhea booed. And it seemed that way based on Ripley, you know, ripping on these, you know, whatever insults she gave to the fans. She said something kind of nasty about the fans. And standing her next to Dom. You know, that's a way to make sure there at least is some booing of your stuff, even as you're opposite of Becky. Javier, what did you think?
Yeah, I that actually is one of my notes on that. Becky Lynch bit much bringing up her dad seemed like a non sequitur based on what's been going on in their feud. Her performance has been weird, not weird in a bad way necessarily, but I was trying to pinpoint it. I think she's like, she seems almost like a junkie going after the belt. Like, you know, she's trying, you know, that's kind of the performance it feels like she's trying to do, that, you know, this is something that she needs her fix of the belt. She needs her fix at the top of the ladder. I'm wondering if they're setting up some sort of like double turn where if she doesn't succeed, you know, she goes too far against Ripley, and that serves to set the stage for a double turn for her and Rhea Ripley.
Yes. I don't sense that's happening, but it's clearly had to have crossed their minds that we might need to do that. But I mean, so much of what they did with Becky and Nia Jax, you know, was, you know, the idea this whole time with Becky is like, give her obstacles to overcome. And it just hasn't worked because fans really like Rhea Ripley and, you know, they love her act. They love her chemistry at Dom. They love booing Dom in a fun way. And they just want to cheer Rhea. And I don't know if you want to turn Becky just because of circumstances, if those circumstances won't exist after WrestleMania. And you could even, you know, move her to a different brand and get her against, you know, a different heel. And then things will be fine. Do you really want to jerk her back and forth and back and forth like that just because she happened to be opposite of Rhea when the timing wasn't good and, you know, again, I just don't think fans are turning against Becky as much as just choosing Rhea over her. But Chris, it sounds like you have some negative feelings about Becky's act right now, or at least it feels stale to you.
Yeah, I would say, and again, she's trying hard. Her matches are always great. But I guess, I don't know if you could call it recency bias and kind of comparing what she's done the last few weeks and a few months to where she was at her peak and how the crowd was so behind her, you know, 5 years ago, and just seeing it's nowhere near that. It really just feels like, not that she's stuck in neutral, but maybe it's what you said, that Rhea is just so popular right now and the crowd loves her. And even that line where she was trying to kind of, you know, talk down to the crowd, I really don't even think that's going to amount to anything by the time we get to Mania. I'm also wondering what the crowd response will be like whatever night they wrestle at WrestleMania. Is it going to be split?
Right.
Is it going to be 80-20 Rhea? I'm betting that the crowd's really going to be behind Rhea and they're going to be maybe not cheering for Becky as much. And that's where I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Maybe she does go heel and maybe it'll be different than last time because nobody wanted her to go heel last time and they were very resistant to it. Maybe they have a better plan in place if they do a double turn. Maybe she's just a more vicious heel than kind of more cocky and cartoonish that I thought she was last time. There are a few possibilities, mm-hmm. but I think a change is definitely warranted for Becky, in my opinion.
Chris, good points. Anything else you want to bring up?
No, that's it. Sorry, I took a lot of time, and I know you have a correspondent
probably
waiting. So,
thanks for
taking my call. I appreciate it, and have a good night, guys.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. You can get a line on the phone banks here, 347-215-8558, push 1, 347-215-8558, and push 1. Ian, after we talk to our correspondent, you're on deck. We also have Jason from Australia on hold and a couple others. We'll get to all of you if you're able to stick with us. Let's go to Charlie Kate, who is in Chicago, attended tonight's live Raw. Charlie, welcome.
How's it going, Wade? How's it going, Javier? How are you guys doing tonight?
Good. It's always fun doing shows after an episode like that, especially when we have an on-site correspondent who can share with us what it was like in that arena. Just they had the upper deck full, like 360 degrees, even behind the stage, as Pat McAfee pointed out during a wide shot. It had to be fun for Cody to be back in that building. And I saw that WrestleTix noted it's the highest attended Raw since they've been tracking Raw in terms of sheer number of actual seats sold. So let's start there. Just talk about the atmosphere and the buzz. I remember being at Target Center in Minneapolis, you know, 11 years ago, whenever it was, 12 years ago, and in the lobby before they opened the doors, fans were just chanting CM Punk. It was just at the old Target Center lobby before the remodel, and it was just fans just chanting CM Punk, and there was a buzz in the building. I can only imagine in Chicago, in this era right now, what that was like. So yeah, kind of share some of that with us.
No, absolutely. And the first time I ever went to the Allstate Arena was a Saturday night live event in October of '99. So during the Attitude Era. But I've been to Green Day at the Allstate Arena. I've been to Metallica. I mean, just tons of shows. And tons of WWE shows, including, like, Money in the Bank. This was on another level. And I didn't go to any of the Survivor Series weekend shows that were at Allstate Arena this year. But watching at home, I could tell. And I looked at tickets the week of, and they opened up seats. They opened up seats for this as well. 2 weeks ago, we started getting local advertisements, but they had to shrink the Raw set. I mean, I think it was the Survivor Series setup they had where there's people behind the stage. Allstate Arena is amazing. It is small, though. I mean, I went to the bathroom twice during the show, and the second time was right after the Punk Rollins McIntyre segment. I mean, you could have told me it was the Lollapalooza bathroom line. I mean, it was, the whole place was wild, and the whole place was unglued. I took a couple notes just watching the show. I mean, everything was heated up, and I did not expect The Rock. I don't think a lot of people did, but I've been at shows, and I have faith in, you know, professional wrestling. I've been watching it long enough that there's always a chance. And same with at Survivor Series when everyone thought the show was over and Punk came out. I mean, when The Rock came out, it was insane. Everyone was losing their mind. There was a row of, you know, grown men, clearly had like a 6-seat setup, going nuts. Everyone's just unglued. And yeah, so much was going on with the show. Honestly, like, just such a big-time feel. I haven't been to a WWE event since the Raw about 2 years ago that opened with Kevin Owens coming out with the bald cap on the way to his match with Steve Austin. And that was great, too. But they are on another level right now. I looked at the pre-sale tickets. They're coming back in June for SmackDown. My seat tonight, I was ninth row from the ring, so row CC, section 111 in the lower level. I got it for $220. Tonight, they are charging $850 in the pre-sale. So that's another completely different note. The product is hot, so ticket prices are obviously becoming very competitive. There's preferred seating. I forgot what the new trend of ticket sales, but just across concerts and everything. Preferred seating sort of thing where they're charging for the closer rows. But yeah, I'd love to hear what you guys want to hear about, because there was just so much. Everyone felt like such a big star.
Yeah. Well, so I'll ask a question too, and then I'll throw it to Javier too. What felt like the peak of the show when it came to fans just sort of being on the edge of their seat? It seems like it probably wouldn't be an actual wrestling match. And I'm thinking it would just sort of obviously be Punk, Cody, Drew, but you know, you talk about the reaction to Rock, and then you have the brawl with Rock and the Bloodline showing up and everyone watching the monitor to see the backstage or the parking lot brawl. So, I mean, was there just a level above everything else in terms of fans on the edge of their seat just being totally into a segment?
No, you were right. It was Punk, Rollins, and McIntyre for sure. I mean, definitely for me personally, watching CM Punk enter a WWE arena, I mean, this is the second time it's happened at the Allstate, but this was the first time it was real. You know, he had a full segment. We knew his character. You know, we had seen him back in the WWE fold. And I just can't believe it. I mean, I really can't believe it. I was at the Raw where leading up to WrestleMania 30, where they sent Heyman out to cut the promo. I was filming the Titantron at the end of the show, hoping he would come out. And I think the Big Show came out. My friend has a video of this, and I'm just crestfallen, realizing, oh, he's really gone, or things are really bad. Punk's not coming back. But, yeah, I mean, it was white hot. So many people are standing throughout the whole show. I mean, myself included, I didn't have any kids directly behind me, and the guys behind me were standing, so that felt good. But, yeah, I mean, it's on fire. I mean, just what everyone has been saying on every post show. But yes, to get specific, Punk, Rollins, McIntyre. And I agree with you guys. I was able to get on when you started the show. It was. I mean, it was, there was real shots. I mean, that Vince line, wild, but that's CM Punk. But all three of them are just in the pocket. I mean, everyone is raising their game because they know how precious the airtime is now. Like, I mean, if you're not killing it during your segment, whether it's a match or a promo, you have like one swing at that. I mean, I won't say mm-hmm. that. Obviously, some people have more bandwidth than others, but it is as competitive as it has ever been in the pro wrestling business. I mean, you got to think there are guys over at AEW going, I got to kill it because this is my audition if I want to be a part of WWE. Nothing against AEW. I respect them. I think they have done a lot for the pro wrestling business. They, you know, they gave Cody and Punk their courage for these WWE runs, I think. I mean, in a lot of ways, I think it was their audition to come back. Maybe things have gone differently if whatever happened. But yeah, an amazing show.
Well, Javier, I'll throw to you.
Yeah, I was curious how engaged everybody was with the actual wrestling part of it, because at least for me, it was hard to gauge because it felt like all the commercials that they did not run during the talking segments, they ran during the matches. It felt like the matches were like 90% commercials. So it was hard to really gauge how much people were into the different wrestling acts that were on.
Yeah, actually, everyone was very much into the matches. I think, you know, Raw has become very promo heavy. SmackDown, too, but SmackDown's got 2 hours, so it's, you know, everything is kind of rushed or there's only so much time. But with Raw, they obviously have a little more time for the matches. Andrade, his match was, yeah, him and Vinci, super hard hitting. I mean, that opening chop was nuts. One funny note about that match, Andrade made his entrance, and then I think it was like 30 seconds of the entrance, and they cut to commercial, and they cut the music in the arena and are showing the commercial and everything goes dark. And then, you know, the lights come back up and his entrance continues when the break was over. But it's kind of interesting how they do that. I think they probably, like, you know, we see enough ads throughout the live event time. But yes, the Ricochet JD match might have been the match of the night. I mean, a lot of near falls that I know some people like, a lot of near falls, some people don't. But they had a great match. I think that match, like the diversity of that match to the Andrade Vinci match being more hard hitting, the Sammy and Bronson also just having a great, you know, kind of fast paced WWE style match, some big moves, and that was good too. Trying to think what, you know, New Day and DIY. Everyone's happy to see them, but I would say the tag ladder match, though I'm sure it will be good at WrestleMania, is on the lower tier of excitement. I mean, I think people are excited that the Judgment Day are in it. And when R-Truth got involved with that whole scuffle, everyone popped super hard. And one thing I do want to note, I've heard on, you know, listening to Torch shows, I think, Wade, you're making this point recently, especially in this era, not everyone can be a champion. It's just not realistic. They have done such a great job with Shinsuke Nakamura.
You can in AEW.
If you ever win.
Oh, boom, boom.
Don't get me started there. Don't get me, yeah.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Oh, I know. It's
I thought I resisted. I tried.
I mean, it's just.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. That'll, but, no, I mean, Nakamura is just so, feels so big time. Even though he is putting all these guys over, I mean, I was like, man, this is what it was like years ago, you know, when he won the Rumble. But yeah, just everyone is so elevated. It just really feels like stars. And I think, you know, part of what I was saying of you really only have one swing at bat. I think they all know that. I really do. And I think the guy or all the performers that have been there from the Vince era transitioning to now, especially the last 2 years or so, they know they are in a different company now and that they have a way bigger audience than they ever did. And if you know, this company is going to continue to grow. I mean, what a live event. I mean, really, just the whole thing is awesome, like truly in the main sense of that word, to be at now. It is so epic. And for a Raw, like I feel like I was at a pay-per-view. I mean, Rock or not, yeah. But Rock, you know, you got Rock, you got Punk, you got Cody, you got Rhea, you got Becky, you got Seth. I mean, I could go on with six other names that are, you know,
yeah,
could be main eventers. I'm sure you can tell I'm still very excited. and energy is just palpable. I mean,
I love it.
Yeah.
So let me ask this, talk about the ebb and flow and emotions with when it came to Becky and Rhea and Dom. I think you heard us probably talking about, or, you know, my take on that, which I felt Becky was doing good work. The thing about her dad felt a little, trying a little too hard, but the stuff about, you know, you don't know what it's like to, you know, be anything but the hot new rising star and, you know, so anyway, I thought it was a good try and it seemed like the crowd at times was on her side, but obviously still, siding with Rhea. So just, yeah, convey what it's like in the building.
Becky had her support and I was part of it, too, while also cheering Rhea, 14-month-old at home. So that line hit. That line hit super hard in just being a parent and, you know, knowing my wife's perspective of being our daughter's mother. I think Becky had one of the best nights that she has had in 2024, certainly leading, you know, once this feud with Rhea started. But the Rhea Ripley title wave is in full force right now, and you just you can't really compare these things, but it's akin to Punk and Cena. Like, Cena was huge in 2011, but you couldn't stop the Punk popularity. The difference with Rhea is Rhea's just backed it up in every way. She's a modern professional wrestler who utilizes social media, you know, in just various ways. I mean, and I think everyone knows that she works really hard. I mean, she's at all these events. She's just crushing it. And I was at the War Games that they had in Chicago years ago, and she was in the War Games match. She got a huge pop then, but just to see her now, I mean, she's the biggest wrestling or female wrestling star since Becky's rise, 100%.
Yeah. Javier, do you have another question?
No, that's pretty much what I had.
Before and after the show, yeah, I know you mentioned in an email to me there wasn't a dark match, but anything to relay that we probably didn't see on TV before, during, or after?
There, I have the main event results if you would like those.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to – yeah, so that was let's see here. Sorry. So it was Katana Chance versus Zoe Stark, and then Hank and Tank versus Anofe and Blade. So I think both those teams are on NXT.
Yeah. And do you remember who won those matches?
Yes, I do. It was Katana Chance. And actually, sorry, it was Katana Chance with her tag partner versus Shayna Baszler with Zoe Stark. Baszler won by submission, and Hank and Tank won with a nice double team sequence to end that match.
Yeah. So how about after Raw? I know Cody was too bloodied and beat down to do a 45-minute autograph session and photo session with fans at ringside like he has done, including we had a house show report from Rockford, Illinois, up on pwtorch.com today, and, you know, how he and Seth just, like, stayed after for a very long time taking photos and stuff. But was there anything after the beatdown of Cody on the big screen? What happened, or did they just thank the fans and everyone left?
You know, it was dark. The Rock Cody segment happened and the screen faded out and the arena stayed dark with, you know, just the red Raw lights. And I was looking over at Samantha Irvin because she had the mic and was kind of talking to one of the producers that was there. And it took about, I would say about 3 to 4 minutes before the house lights finally came up. And she said, "That's it." Which I said to the guy next to me, I was like, "Oh, the kids in the crowd, like, we did not get sent home happy." But I mean, you can't argue
yeah.
with The Rock. But that was, I mean, just to talk about that for a second, that was vicious. And I mean, I just wore a hoodie into the arena. I brought a poncho with because I knew it was going to be pouring rain. That,
yeah.
I mean, the whole thing. I mean, when they were fighting in the outside with the rain pouring down, I mean, just like the cinematic quality of it all. Like, you can't time that. And you knew it wasn't pre-recorded because it was pouring rain. I mean, I think. I don't know if it started raining, you know, shortly after the Rock segment and he got out of there. But, yeah, I mean, blood, rain, The Rock, Cody, I mean, and, yeah, I mean, just also, too, all the cursing that's happening now to really put the reality aspect of everything over the line, you know, is entertaining. I mean, it's entertaining and it's intense and it makes this feel like, you know, WWE, if WWE was on HBO or Netflix, as we will see.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Well, when Cody was kind of riffing about himself, he's bringing up some of the things that I brought up Friday on the SmackDown post show that might have been a good response to Roman. He didn't do it as like he kind of did as an explicit dig at Roman that I do things Roman can't understand. It almost felt like he was trying to get in some things that, you know, we've all been through that. We're like, oh, I wish I would have thought that of that in the moment. So we had some of that when it came to, you know, why he does what he does. Did that get talk about the reaction to Cody and how much he held fans' attention and if there was anything that you thought worked or didn't work in particular? I know we're going on, you know, the 4 hours ago now that happened, but your thoughts.
No, I mean, it was the start of the show and Cody's entrance riles everyone up. Everyone loves the song. Everyone sings the song, or a lot of people sing the song. He was holding the attention, but it was a loud crowd right to start. You know, I think everyone was really excited and just had trouble kind of staying focused because Cody does get wordy. I think he's great. I really do.
Yeah.
And I don't, want to, you know, whatever. These guys know. Whether they admit they listen to this stuff, they listen to your show or other stuff, like, they know the perception. And I think you were saying, too, like, about Rock having a way, you know, better night tonight after kind of having his entertainment hour with the Rock concert. I think they are taking feedback week to week. No, Cody did great. Cody really did do great. The stuff about how he got invited to be the best man for a fan's wedding.
Oh, yeah.
And how he's going to – Aaron, yeah, and the kid's birthday as well, but how he's going to pay for the bachelor party and all this stuff. I mean, it's a bit – that sort of thing, like I love the fans and I give back to the fans and look at the specific example of what I did for my fans, you know, not everyone's going to like it and people are going to take it a certain way of like, well, I guess Cody is just the most perfect human being and he's cool and he's number one. And like, you know, like some people just can't.
There's no more humble celebrity in the world who's more giving back to his fan base than Cody. That's his character. But the good part about it, Charlie, is it's believable. Like, you know, and you might think, you might even judge him for it. Like, hey, just go spend time with your family instead of strangers who admire you as a celebrity. You could think that maybe there's not enough time to go around to, you know. But at the same time, it's like, that's who he is, and that's what he wants to do. And as I said last Friday, I think, on the post show, it's why Cody didn't want to turn heel in AEW, you know, because he wants to do this stuff. And it's, you know, Cena with a Make-A-Wish. This is kind of, you know, it's not an official charity, but it is Cody going, yeah, I want to hang with my friends, young and old.
Absolutely. And I still come back to one of the promos he did last year leading up to WrestleMania 39, and I love the line about, you think I wear this suit because I think I am somebody. It's because I want to be somebody. And like, I am in Cody's corner. I loved him back in the day, and my friends were always frustrated that like, there's something here and there's a lot more there now, obviously. I mean, just, he has a nice, resume of matches and big moments and crushing promos and winning the crowd over. I mean, he wins the crowd over every week. Even if he loses them, he knows how to get them back. And, you know, I do believe this is what he wanted. And I do believe he's up to the test to, you know, not to steal a Christian Cage line, but outwork everybody.
They say dress for the job you want. And that's kind of Cody's line. I mean, it's a little more than that because, I mean, there's a lot of things that go into Cody presenting himself the way that he does. But that's a whole other conversation. It's not negative. It's just there's a lot of strategies and just sort of comfort zone. That's his comfort zone. I think when, anyway, Charlie, anything else you want to share with us about your experience tonight?
Todd talking earlier this or on the fix about how the signs are back and how that can make your live experience hit or miss. There was actually a guy two rows ahead of me, and I was in the third row before the floor, so he was in the first, had this enormous poster sized cardboard sign of I assume he was with his wife and their baby, and it was enormous, but there are tons of signs, and so you do have to duck and weave that stuff. And again, like I come back to, like, I definitely want people to bring their kids to these shows. I was 9 the first time I went to a WWF at the time event. But it is getting wild in there. I'm a musician. I love going to concerts. It isn't as wild tonight at a WWE event as any concert I've ever been to, any punk show, take your pick of shows. It is a big time feel. Everyone wants to be a part of these WWE shows now, from young to old. And not that much. I sent you some pictures of in the thread we were communicating today of the merch stand, and what shirts and stuff they had there. They were selling some.
Yeah.
I think Punk actually was shown with that Chicago Cubs belt, that replica belt.
So
that stuff is cool. That stuff is cool.
The Vince McMahon mural.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. When we talked, I was just correspondent.
Fill people in on that.
At the Allstate Arena, there are murals in the concourse. And there is one that is pretty outdated. We talked about it last time, Wade, last time I called in, pulled up. But yeah, it's got many WWE superstars. I want to say the last time it was updated. Oh yeah. I mean, we got Batista, Undertaker, Macho Man, Roddy Piper, Cena, Rock, Ric Flair, Andre the Giant, and right in the middle, Stephanie in her ring gear on one side, Triple H holding the WWE Championship on the other side, and smack dab in the middle, still, it is March 25th, 2004, Vincent Kennedy McMahon, to steal a line from CM Punk tonight, pre-shoe polish in his hair. I think that was a dig he made at Drew McIntyre's beard. But yeah, and you know, I don't blame the good people of the Allstate Arena that run that place. But I would hope someone is walking around from WWE and sees that, and maybe someone can make time to, like, can we paint this? Because there's clearly been some other updated stuff, but yeah, they got to get rid of that. But it's, you know, I'm sure it'll come with time. Yeah, it's a tough thing to see. But you know, with him gone,
who's the woman in the
never been better?
Who's the woman in the? Oh, sorry. Who's the woman in the far right? Sorry,
no,
step on here, Charlie. Under
no,
who's the
fine.
Woman under Goldberg in the corner?
Let me see. Right here.
I think it's a Connor.
That's Layla. It's
okay. Yeah.
The right,
it was tough
the
with the
right.
Angle over the
yeah.
brick to make it out. Yeah. 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 Okay.
Yeah.
So Layla's there too.
Yeah. Eddie Guerrero.
Who doesn't
there.
Belong? In this
yeah.
picture?
Oh yeah.
Everybody else
is a
Hall of
Famer. Is in this picture.
okay. Well, I take that back then. But he's way in the background of his arms. I think. Please don't turn the channel.
Right.
Well, that really timestamps it. Yeah, cool. Charlie, thanks. Anything else quick you want to add? I want to get to our callers, too, who are on hold, hopefully still on hold here. But we
no, for,
just
for sure.
So much good stuff to talk about.
No, that's it for tonight. I'm going to start doing the SmackDown hits and misses on PWTorch website. Go VIP, call into the shows. I'm back. I'm so schedule has been cleared. Let's do some wrestling. I'm ready. You guys have a great
awesome.
Night. Javier, been a fan for a long time. Love your song. It's a great song. And, you guys enjoy the rest of the show. I'll be listening.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Charlie. Yeah, check out Charlie Kidd will be writing SmackDown Hits and Misses starting this Friday for PWTorch.com. Okay, I don't even want to give out the phone number again. I don't know if we have time for more than we already, the line of people we have on hold. But as promised, we'll go to long time caller Ian from Tennessee first. Ian, welcome to the show. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Okay, so first I'm going to come to Javier's defense and say Dune Part 2 has been out for close to a month now, so people that haven't seen it, that's on you guys. Secondly.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I had no idea how long it's been out.
It's been out for like a month, so I mean, come on, guys, you're missing out. But first thing I want to say is
I just saw Dune 1. I just saw the first one from 2021. Like, I just watched it last night, so it might be like 5 more years before you can give me spoilers for the second one.
I mean, Dune 2.
What was the other thing you were complaining about spoilers with?
I can't think of the you know, the black and white.
Yeah.
I can't think of even the name right now.
Citizen Kane.
Thank you. Yeah, Citizen Kane. Yeah. But still, well, yeah.
There's a statute of limitations for it.
Not on classics. Every generation has to watch it the first time. All right. Go ahead, Ian.
I wasn't a fan of first of The Rock. At the end, getting physical with Cody, but then I was thinking, as you guys were talking, like, it made sense because at first, you know, when he came out, I think it was perfect the way they did it, where no words needed to be said, just have that stare down. What did you guys think?
Yeah, especially because we saw more of him later. But, you know, it's unadvertised, and, yeah, he got up to Cody, and there was the intrigue of what did he say, and then they followed up on it as the show progressed. So, I mean, that it worked for me. I mean, for Rock to show up, do his entrance, get in Cody's face, have a moment or two of tension, drop a little, like, I want lip readers to let us know what he said, too, because, I assume a good lip reader is going to be able to know what he said. And he said something on camera, but off mic, and left. I thought it was good. You know, I mean, obviously he's going to be on Raw next week. They're advertising him, so I wouldn't want that to be the final segment with The Rock. But I thought it worked. Javier, what were your thoughts at the time, and did it change over time?
Yeah, actually one of my notes was if you had asked me a year ago, I would never have come up with the idea that you would have, or like 2 years ago, that you would have Cody Rhodes and The Rock standing in the ring with the "This is awesome" chant going on.
Yeah.
You know, and then not talking, because it just feels like not that's something I think of, like when you might have like Ospreay and Okada for the first time or something like that, some weird combination. You know,
yeah.
it was just not, you know, it does go to show like how much the fans are on the Cody bandwagon. So
to 90% of pro wrestling fans globally, Rock and Cody standing in the ring is a much more significant moment than anything with Okada. I mean, Okada is a great signing for AEW, and he can do great things for them, but let's be realistic about the impact of WWE right now globally and how big of a name Rock is and how immensely popular Cody is compared to anyone in AEW right now. So, you know, for hardcore listeners who are mad at that fact being dropped, you know, because they're in a, you know, in a state of being savvy enough to know, you know, who's been having the best matches and whose body of work will stand the test of time and all that, just the reality of just the popularity of the moment. Come on, Cody Rock is it's a shock. It's shocking if you rewind 3 years that it's happening, but it's not shocking that the crowd finds it awesome in 2024. And not that you were saying that, Javier, but in a way it sort of jumps out like, this is the most cool moment for most wrestling fans right now. The biggest celebrity in the world, arguably, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, with WWE pedigree, pro wrestling pedigree, predating Vince McMahon, and in terms of his family, opposite the hottest babyface in the business right now, who also is a multi-generational star, who's been on this really interesting, going into WrestleMania season during a time that WWE's hotter than they've been ever or in a very, very long time, since Stone Cold. So, yeah, that's massive, and it's so amazing, and the crowd is eating it up, and it's not a perfect company. Not everybody involved who's over right now are perfect people in things they've said or are still saying or how they operate. Those are small caveats compared to the big picture, which is you kind of feel good about this crew right now doing the work that they're doing. And you sense that people are showing up and enjoying what they do, working with each other. You know, I only hear good things about CM Punk right now. You know, I mean, some people are like, well, you know, the first time something goes wrong, we'll see. But, like, it's like even Punk in this atmosphere is just showing up, and it's like, all's great. And, you know, people love Cody. Doesn't mean they don't whisper, like, you know, something here and there that may or may not be fair about him. He knows that. That happened in AEW, too. But it's like you kind of it's fun to root for this company. You can see that it's Charlie and even the first our first call, like I haven't watched in a while, and I watched, and now I'm kind of getting pulled back in. It's a really cool time to watch a show when you know you're gonna have what the 11th straight TV sellout is Cold Breaks about. They're just it's good stuff right now. Anyway, straight off, Ian, back to you.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say about Punk, you know, and Punk and AEW, it worked at first, but I mean, it was. Even Punk said it was kind of just horribly run and nobody knew what they were doing over there. But with WWE, they know like what they're doing. They have their stories built out. And I did notice, you guys mentioned Drew. There was a part in backstage with New Day and DIY and Austin Truth where Drew was talking to Paul Heyman backstage. I don't know if you guys saw that or not.
We saw the what? Sorry.
It was Drew was talking to Paul Heyman backstage. I don't know if you guys saw that, but it's
Like in the background?
Done that. Yeah, it was background. It was just like it was just Paul and Drew. They were just talking back and forth. Like you couldn't hear what they were saying, but it seemed like a very intense conversation.
Oh, interesting. No, I didn't pick up on that. What segment was it? Or do you know, Javier?
No, I missed that.
Yeah.
It was New Day and DIY. It was the backstage segment right before the New Day DIY match. And it was Truth was saying, oh, yeah. I talked to Pat McAfee or somebody, and we're going to be on commentary.
Yeah.
Which I think it was cool that they do that because you kind of make like segments
it
can't be missed
like
because
that.
Of that. But I did want
to
mention.
It makes it harder for me to do my job. I gotta you know, fix typos and type analysis while I'm typing on my light. This was a densely packed show. It's tough to keep up on.
Yeah, I got to remember that because that is something that when Black and Gold NXT, they used to do that a lot with like, you know, innocuous people in the background. Which later turn out to be big things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my final point is I know you guys have a bunch more callers, but I've been really loving the whole marketing with Bray Wyatt, you know, with the commercials and them cutting to the crowd and it being, mm-hmm. you know, it's pitch black and seeing the fireflies. It just really just brings – it's just so well seeing how much impact Bray Wyatt did have on pro wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're presenting this tastefully. They're marketing it, but they're also telling a story that I think fans want to hear. I'm real interested, in a week from now when that drops, you know, the job that they do telling that story. I mean, it's going to be, you know, through a WWE lens, and I mean, we'll see how much of the framing stands up to scrutiny. I think it'll actually stand up pretty well. I mean, my kind of default mode is there's going to be spin, but I don't know that there's really much spinning to do on this. It's a tragedy, and he was a major character for a good number of years and stirred a lot of conversation and, carved out a very distinct area of, the sports entertainment realm of WWE. Javier, any quick thoughts on how they're marketing that and what you anticipate and what you anticipate or fear or anything as far as that goes?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be able to watch that. It's going to be rough because, I mean, the Bray one was like, you know, that one hit different for me, so.
Yeah. Understandable.
I didn't believe it at first when my friend told me he passed away. I literally was like, there's no way. I mean, he, like, just came back and was back for a month, and then, you know, it just happened, which was just wild.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there was stuff going on with him. And so, I was less shocked than if he had just been around full time and looked healthy and was doing his thing. You know, the fact that he kept kind of having start and stops and you heard there were health issues, it didn't shock me as much as some others. But that doesn't mean it wasn't shocking. You know what I mean? It's just like, oh, crap. You know, whatever was going on with him was pretty serious. And I'd heard that, but I didn't think it was serious to the degree, and nor did he, or he probably would have been wearing the defibrillator. You know, I mean, it's just like, it obviously was, deadly, deadly what he's going through. And I think we'll learn even more about it when this documentary comes out. I mean, that's the part that, you know, I just hope they're real, you know, forthright about, because I think fans are really just want to feel like they're being, told, brought into the journey that he was on so they can kind of understand better. And I think it'll help them, you know, kind of reconcile and, I don't know if be at peace is the word, but feel filled in and understand what happened to somebody who they really felt an attachment to as, you know, fans of any entertainment genre do when somebody is as big of a big a part of that genre as Bray had been for years. Ian, back to you.
Yeah, you know, my final point is, Raw has been can't miss. Like, you can't miss anything or, you know, something wild has happened. And the build to WrestleMania has been exceptional. You know, it seems like every match that they're putting on this card has a big story to it and something big is going to happen. But, I was really shocked that Bronson Reed beat Sami Zayn. I kind of thought Sami was going to beat him, but I was just like, I was really shocked that Bronson just beat him. I was like, wow, I can't believe that just happened.
Yeah, but it fits the story well. I mean, it's a good win for Bronson, but, you know, it was tainted in the sense that obviously it was Gunther playing mind games. But, you know, I don't mind – well, this was just a clean finish. I don't mind somebody like Sammy losing in an upset to Bronson, especially because Bronson could use the win, when it plays into this story of Chad Gable going, I can get you back on track. And Sammy seems receptive to it because Sammy is just like, you know, so just like – you know, in his own head all the time. And Gable's character is someone who, you know, can be a coach and he's dropped comedic stuff. What do you think of this story, Javier? I'm curious for your thoughts.
Well, it wasn't totally clean because Zayn did hesitate when Gunther came out and that gave,
yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Yes. And that led straight to the thing. So
exactly.
Yeah, clean, but to further that storyline of, he's in his own head, and I find it interesting what the Gable angle is. What's interesting to me because now that he said, "Oh, I'll teach you," is interesting. Makes mm-hmm. me think that it kind of makes me feel like Zayn is gonna win and then set him up for a feud with Gable. I know that a lot of you and myself included that I don't know if Zayn really needs to, you know, win this massive, you know, because there's a lot of equity built in that title right now that somebody else can use. I don't think he necessarily needs it, but if this also means like Gunther moves up to the big title, you know, I'll take it. But yeah, I so far, it's not my favorite storyline, but that doesn't mean it's bad. It's just that it's like the 20th down, you know. That's
right.
Yeah. Interesting, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it has enough moving pieces where I am curious. It is curious whether they're actually going to put it on him. I don't think he's like really hot right now. Zayn is. But it just feels like they're going to be resetting one of the two, either Zayn or Gable into a new kind of character.
Yes, and I'm intrigued. I there's, you know, a couple obvious directions this can go, and I am going to enjoy their interactions because I have so far. Ian, any quick closing words?
Yeah, my about the Intercontinental, depending on how they do the matches, I could see if Judgment Day loses the tag belt and Ripley, you know, would do like a backstage and Ripley says, hey, we're going to get back on track. Have Sammy barely beat Gunther and then probably just have Priest go in and cash in and do it that way, eliminates Gunther entirely, or they do what they did with Seth and make it a triple threat and have Damian pin Sammy and have Gunther not be involved. And then you not only knock out the briefcase, you protect Gunther at the same time, but that's just my that's just my crazy brain. But I'll let you guys get two more calls.
Thanks. Ian, appreciate the call. Good topics. Javier, I could see something along those lines happening. I mean, you solve a lot of issues if you play up something similar to what Ian just laid out.
Well, the heel babyface dynamics don't exactly work, but I want to see Drew McIntyre win the title and then it gets cash in done.
You want to see Drew beat Seth.
Yes, and win the title, and as he's holding it up, he gets cashed in on. So
okay.
He doesn't get to celebrate his what he wanted was to celebrate. For
I gotcha.
The problem is the alignments don't work, babyface heel wise.
I think the idea of trying to have a situation where Gunther loses the IC title, Sammy gets a win.
Yeah.
But Gunther's protected. It sets up something with Gable and Sammy afterwards, but also you get rid of the Money in the Bank, which shouldn't be involved with the world title. Unless Priest goes babyface, you know, but then it still doesn't work. So, yeah, just, you know, cash in on the IC title, and then a couple things get set up that way. Maybe that's too many moving parts all at WrestleMania, but maybe not. Anyway, well,
in terms of Gunther, his overconfidence, they're also setting up his overconfidence, which is also what could end up causing him to lose.
And it does, and then that wouldn't hurt his credibility. You know, it's like, yeah, really good team can lose to a really bad team if it's clear the good team didn't take them seriously, and it doesn't mean they're not good. It means they got high, a little too high on themselves, and then they correct course. So, yeah, there's definitely ways to work that. Okay, we'll go to area code 408 next. 408, thanks for holding. What's on your state your name and where you're calling from, first of all.
Hi, this is Ken. This is my first time calling in ever. I'm pretty excited.
Cool. Where
are
you calling from?
I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area, but I live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Rich Fan's backyard.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Well, good to talk to you. Welcome. We love hearing from first-time callers. Thanks for holding it. Hold on time tonight. What's in your mind about Raw?
Well, first, let me just say it's fun to finally talk after all these years. I've been a VIP subscriber for a long time, so go VIP.
Sweet. Thank you.
I've interacted with you on social media before, back when Twitter was, you know, non-Elon Musk. So, but that's a whole different discussion.
Yes, it is.
So,
yep.
So
Steve's got a new logo
coming
up. That'll fix everything.
Yeah, oh, God. So I wanted to say I really am excited for this WrestleMania. This will be my eighth one in the last 10 years. Obviously, I didn't go to the 2020 and 2021 shows. But I really loved The Rock's assault on Cody tonight. That was what I think we all were waiting for, whether it was going to be him or Roman, and it was beautiful. The imagery was great. I've kind of watched the WWE on USA YouTube channel. They have the clip of it now, the 7.5 minutes, and just the images are just tremendous the whole time. And the blood was great. They don't do it very often, but when they do, it matters and it means something. So
that's a really
else?
Good point. It didn't even strike me as much as it should have. How much of a very how much it feels like Cody's brand to bleed, but it's not WWE brand, you know. So it isn't as shocking to see Cody bleed as it would be almost anybody else on Raw on USA Network. And then for Rock to be part of it, it is one of those things. It's like Ricochet when he does all these high spots. The announcers get everything out of it possible because not everybody's doing it, and so what he does stands out more, and the announcers can really tout his athleticism. And that's his brand. He's the guy who does those moves. And it's what it doesn't mean you want to dumb down the product and strip it of all excitement. That's a false choice. But in AEW, so many people are doing so many of the same spots over and over and kicking out, and you just sort of get numb to it. And that's why I think dialing back within a match and even with – Yes, exactly. So
I can never watch that.
Yeah. I mean, it's from a business prudent standpoint, it is – ill-advised, and it is a moment that's going to grab people's attention who are not used to seeing that level of red graphic imagery from WWE. Comment on that quick. The fact that we saw the blood, like, how much did that jump out to you? And I'll throw it back.
Well, I mean, it did jump out to me, but I was surprised that they wouldn't let Cody do this at some point. I think it's they decided to do it here, where it's more in control than actually have it happen in the match. I thought it was great with the white belt and everything. The Rock was like, it almost felt like The Rock's like, oh, I always wanted to do something like this. He felt into it. That's what it felt old school to me in that respect. And it's funny what you're talking about, Wade, is that it doesn't happen often, because even what you brought up Ricochet, one of my thoughts was, Cole went nuts for a move that Ricochet does. I was like, oh my God, what was that? That was incredible. And I'm like, dude, that was a super poisoned rounder. We see seven of them in AEW on Dynamite.
Yeah.
But it was like a move you don't see that often, and he sold it like, oh my God, this was incredible. Same thing with seeing the segment, particularly since it's so out of turn, and the fact that The Rock was also dropping, because he drops an F-bomb at some point during that, it kind of made it feel like this is not supposed to be happening. We shouldn't be watching this. We shouldn't be watching the bleeding. We shouldn't be watching this. This is outside of the norm of what is WWE wrestling.
Were any of you a little nervous that Rock was going to throw Cody off the edge into the ramp that goes down into the deep parking garage?
That thought occurred to me.
Ken?
Yeah, that popped in my head, the Steve Austin thing from 25 years ago about when they were fighting over the broken skull belt. But there's moments in the clip which are funny. Well, not funny, but like when Rock's talking at the camera after he throws Cody into the bus for like the third time, if you catch it, you have to. It's they show Cody on all fours, and you can see his right hand. He's blading right there on camera.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. So it's been going on in wrestling forever. It's hard to hide that sometimes. But the cool image is Pharaoh, who Rock has talked about sometimes. On the bus, there's an image of Pharaoh looking ahead, and he's literally looking at Cody while he's leaning, bleeding.
See, that dog shouldn't be – that is – I'm not cool with that. That dog is not going to know.
It's an image. It's on the side of the truck.
I was looking out the window. Oh, God.
Yeah, it's an image on the bus.
Okay. All right.
I caught it, too.
I was like, seriously, you were in the window watching that beat down? Why did I hear
No. I caught the imagery of he was up against the door of the truck and he's leaning up against Pharaoh like
the
Pharaoh
dog
was kind of like
Oh wow.
And I thought there's some other images I don't want to stay too long, so I'll just bring up this point. I'm looking forward to this WrestleMania. I'm a big Bayley fan because she's from the Bay Area like I am. So AJ Styles, LA Knight, but this one last thing about the Rock Cody segment. It was interesting. I don't know if they planned it out this way with the trucks, but there's an image of Steve Austin there looking on. And, all those reports are going out that he will be in Philadelphia for the show. And, I know Jason Powell brought it up with you on the flagship. Maybe he gets involved somehow. But I don't know. There's all the images. There's symbolism there. There's John Cena image on the truck looking at him, looking at you in the camera. And it's like, there's all these different things going around. Is any of them going to get involved? The only one I can think of is Steve Austin, but does he really want to get involved with something that, given he and Rock do have kind of that rivalry going back, almost 25 years. So that's just something that popped in my head. So
there are so many things that can be feel pretty epic about what's going on if they don't add anything unadvertised. And then it can just take it to another level if they add more to it.
I'm excited.
Ken, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Wade. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No problem. Nope. So anything else you want to bring up, Ken? And I hope we hear from you again either way. I hope it isn't a long stretch.
All the matches are really good. The tag team match is going to be fascinating. The Drew McIntyre Seth match, especially with CM Punk at ringside, you just wonder. And also, is Drew going to get involved in Saturday on night one on April 6th in that tag match with Rock and Roman versus Cody and Seth? Is he going to do something? So that's my last bit.
Especially with the Heyman Drew commentary.
Yep.
Or the conversation, I should say.
The conversation, what I think, is actually plays into the end of tonight's show because this Drew took part in the beatdown.
Ah, that's right. Yep, that makes sense.
But it could play the season. It is Paul Heyman.
That's right. Cool.
So, all right. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. I'm glad I finally got to call in for the first time.
Yeah. Ken, it's great to interact with you vocally.
Yep.
And not just
thank
email and social media. Very cool. Thanks.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Call again, and I appreciate your support as a VIP member for sure. PWTorch.com/GoVIP. Support us and get a lot in return. All right. We'll go to Freddie in Los Angeles, and then we'll wrap up calls with Jason from Australia after that. Freddie, welcome. Thanks for calling. What's in your mind about Raw tonight?
What's up, Wade? What's up, Javier? I can't believe your topic A wasn't stink face of Nia Jax. That's not the most important topic?
Nope.
Got it. Fair enough. Fair enough.
They sure brought it up
a lot, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting, her. I guess it's her fiance, Buddy Matthew at AEW, said, well, you know what? That's a weekly occurrence for me. I was like, yeah, that's kind of a nice little snarky comment.
Wow.
I thought the show was fresh. I thought the show was feisty. I thought the show really moved along nicely. The first promo, Cody Rhodes, my boy Cody, I thought he really, really, really just had that crowd, to me at least, it seemed like in the palm of his hands, you know, cheer for Michael Cole, point at the WrestleMania sign. You know, I mean, all of the little intricacies. And like you said, Wade, last week, you know, the whole, you know, he's a politician thing. And, you know, him talking about, you know, all the things that he does that Roman can't do and things of that nature. I thought he really, 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 really hit it out the park. And I'm just wondering, does this look like they're setting up Cody Rhodes versus Rock at SummerSlam? Because that's kind of the feeling I got when Rock sort of stepped up to Cody and then he didn't say anything and he walked away. I thought, like, man, is this a SummerSlam matchup? I just want to know what you guys think.
Yeah, I think so. That'd be my top pick for when those two face off. I don't think they'll wait a year. And I don't think it'll be at a different event. I think it might be another event, but most likely SummerSlam, unless there's some scheduling issue that would prevent it. And, you know, I don't want to get into spoilers, and hopefully others don't either. I mean, I want to see it play out, but certainly that's it seems like the pieces are in place for that, Javier.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is has The Rock been bitten by the wrestling bug would be a question, because, you know, I could see if he wants to, you know, it depends how much involved he wants and can be. If it's a longer term, yeah, I could see Cody and Rock down the road. Or if he's not, either not going to be available, I think they're going to more want to get Reigns and Rock out first, yeah, or out instead. So I think we'll find out, you know, come WrestleMania, whether The Rock is actually on Cody's side, which I am a lot weaker on. I was a lot more sure before today's beatdown,
uh-huh,
for sure. I don't think today's beatdown completely negated it, but just made it a lot less likely. But we'll see. I mean, you know, because the two of them standing, you know, across from each other and getting that chant, you know, I think people want to see a one-on-one against them. But people, also, I think there is also something to be said about, you know, The Rock and Roman. And I think you could get that if The Rock either purposely or is the one who takes the pin during that match, that Reigns turns on The Rock, leading to a, you know, blaming The Rock as losing the title. I could see that end up, you know, happening.
Very good. Freddie, back to you.
Two other quick things. The other thing was, just wanted your guys' commentary on this. I thought a lot of people, at least, you know, some of my friends, and just hearing online, people thought, oh, you know, the way Cody murks it up sometimes, you know, is interesting earlier, you know, which is true. A caller said earlier, you know, you can be a little wordy, you know, that I have some guy friends like, oh, why is he crying? You know, that WrestleMania crowd is a smart crowd and, you know, they're going to boo him. Well, he was in front of Chicago tonight. And Chicago is one of the smartest crowds, you know. And personally, I kind of think, by the way, 7 years ago, they were in Philadelphia. WWE was in Philadelphia for Royal Rumble. And The Rock holds up, you know, Roman Reigns' hand in that iconic moment, and they boo him, you know. And so they'll obviously be back in Philadelphia now. And, you know, they wanted Roman Reigns to be that sort of babyface. It never happened. Now Cody is that babyface. And, like, the good guy babyface, I think he would have been that even without The Rock's help. So maybe that kind of needles The Rock as well, too. I mean, I don't know. But the second question would be, what do you think that – I mean, it's hard to predict, but do you think, like, tonight sort of in front of a smart crowd is almost like foreshadowing that, you know, he sort of will get the desired reaction at WrestleMania, or do you see it otherwise?
Javier, what do you think?
Cody getting the Cody's definitely gonna be what's the expression, over like Rover at WrestleMania. I think it's because the smart crowd knows the story that they're telling, and you can see with Roman Reigns and a lot of these wrestlers that when they come out, they get cheered because, you know, hey, we're seeing this guy. But once the act starts, they're actually acting accordingly. And I think that Cody right now has two things going for him. I think the main thing, because I know some people say, you know, talking about, oh, you know, the politician thing that was brought up, has been brought up a few times and brought up by Roman Reigns and stuff. I think that part of it is that in, like, general, like, you know, if you expand to more entertainment, like TV shows and movies and stuff, there's a dearth of, like, white knight. And I really think that Cody Rhodes is the only, like, white knight guy, you know, or white knight, you know, character that we've got. And I think people, like, glomming onto that, even though he may be corny, and they're forgiving that just because it's just not, it's, we have enough of like the, you know, Walter White's and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That we're not really getting that, you know, you know, that pure kind of character. That said, at some point that gets a little bit cloying, and at some point, you know, people, you know, are going to turn, and they could have probably one of the best heels of all time if you know, the time comes and Cody's willing to go with it. And I'm never going to get over the fact of the Homelander thing. And that was actually brought up by somebody, I think, was it on SmackDown, that compared him to Homelander or said, you know, your Homelander gimmick or something like that. And I'm like, I've seen the show. I know what Homelander is. So, you know.
Yes, I just, Cody is like so in sync with the fan base. And I mean, I'd be repeating myself if I went into why. I mean, it's just, people find him genuine and he's the right person at the right time. He took the right journey. He's getting coached in good ways behind the scenes so he can still be authentically himself, but there's a little subtraction of some things that got him a little off course. And he also is being dropped into a hot product that he's helped make it hotter, but he's playing off of a lot of big names. And I, you know, like I said early on in the show here a couple hours ago, the involvement of Rock at first was a negative for Cody. And you know, just I was thinking when they're standing in the ring opposite of each other, you know, Rock's benefiting from Cody being this really mega over baby face. But, you know, and that should be set. It's not just Rock giving a rub to others. Cody is giving Rock a rub. And Rock might not realize the degree to which, or certainly he didn't at one point. But Cody's benefiting too. You know, this is a big thing for Cody to stand opposite of Rock like that and get beat up by Rock in this memorable angle with blood. So there's people who know Rock and maybe didn't know Cody, and there's people who are immersed in Cody and think Rock's a Hollywood guy and stay away from our storylines and you know, don't disrupt things that were going well. And I think they've weaved their way through some tough waters, and I think everybody's going to end up. I think everyone's going to end up better off because of the way that they've been able to navigate this. As far as Rock getting the wrestling bug, yeah, I mean, I don't know that he lost it. I mean, all wrestlers talk about being back in front of a live crowd is just intoxicating. You know, I'm still not convinced Rock is like adored by, you know, I think there's still some legit, you know, vinegar on a paper cut type, you know, aiming with some of these comments at him, hoping it stings a little bit. And they're trying to get digs in, but then the plausible deniability of, oh, no, we're just trying to get heat and Rock won't say anything. I think there is a little bit of a big, you know, perception being a big head and flexing his power and coming from kind of la-la land of – but, you know, as I always say as a caveat to that, how could you not if you've lived like Rock has lived? I mean, you got to be somewhat forgiving of someone who's as big as him coming in and not realizing in this world, the people buying tickets might not see him as someone that's worth screwing up a good thing otherwise, even though he gets, you know, obviously and deservedly so mega crowd responses. So it's just this weird, complex situation. But I think it's being handled like really well in terms of the end product on air. We still have to see how it plays out at WrestleMania. But anyway, winding back to your Freddie, anything you want to follow up on your question or anything else you want to bring up?
Last thing, but a quick aside, Pat McAfee seems a lot dialed down, you know, this week. So,
yes.
You know, that was good. Of course, the yeet thing towards the end, just, you know, he can't help himself. I'm eating all over the place. I'm like, all right, buddy. Okay. I can get the reference. You know, but I think, you know, he seems a little bit more dialed down than normal, so I'll take that as a win. And also, too, Cody with the, you know, the wank bank sort of comment, like you and Roman Reigns, you know, or have a little wank session. I was like, whoa, okay, Cody. Edgy Cody's coming out. All right.
Yeah,
I got a real good kick out of that one. Last question. I really enjoy Triple H taking over the creative product. Feels fresh. It almost feels as though, you know, we may be getting closer to, especially, you know, on the AEW side, you know, with Will Ospreay and, you know, MJF coming back, and, you know, everyone's with their talent, and then, you know, and Samoa Joe, and then on WWE side, you know, all of their talent. It really seems like we might be one day getting back into those sort of Monday Night Wars when both products are crazy hot, which is really kind of cool. So I really like how the product is so hot that even the mid-card scene is being heated up, like seeing Ricochet, you know, with two nice wins. Back-to-back is really, really, like, to me, that gets me motivated, you know, because everybody's getting the love. What? How in the hell do they heat up Shinsuke Nakamura is my last question, because I love the guy. How do they? Because I remember seeing him, you know, when he went against, was it AJ Styles back in the day, because I don't really know a lot of his New Japan work before that. But I remember, you know, JR talking about it, and, you know, AJ Styles, like, wow, this guy's amazing, and all the hype. And when he came, I'm like, yeah, he's going to be this kind of sadistic heel, whatever, cool. And, you know, wow, I mean, maybe the Vince McMahon thing, you know, era sort of watered him down. And I thought when Triple H took over, he's doing all these cool, you know, promos. I'm like, yeah, they're going to get him back up, but then he just loses. So I saw the promo tonight, and it was like, yeah, but he's going to lose. So how do you guys think that you can heat him back up? Because he seems to be such a valuable and necessary talent for the brand. Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thanks, Freddie. I think they're using Shinsuke well right now. Like, I think he can – it's weird to say this, but he can kind of talk his way back into relevance with these vignettes and the captions. I think at some point he needs to win a feud sometime soon. But that's not so much heating him up as just basically, you know, keeping him relevant to be in a believable opponent in a TV main event that's serving a larger purpose. Javier, what do you think?
Yeah, I co-sign all that. I mean, he's 44, so I don't think he's going to get, like, you know, you're not going to see him, you know, for the title, unless, like you said, it's just like a main event, you know, long period between pay-per-views, and we need to do something. But yeah, I mean, a gatekeeper. I mean, he makes for a good gatekeeper. Feels like we'll see what happens with DIY come WrestleMania, but DIY kind of feels like they've been used in the same kind of thing. We'll see where what's British Strong Style, what's their new name? Catch Republic, I think.
Yeah, New Catch Republic.
New Catch. Yeah. So the, you know, we'll see, because I think they'll probably end up sort of in the same place. Just, you know, have a bunch of good gatekeepers, and just, yeah, have them win like the occasional match against, you know, or, you know, a couple of Garganos or Gables in a row. You just have them win a couple of those, and then just, you know, move on from there.
Yeah. Yep. Sounds good. All right. So Jason from Australia had to go. I didn't know he was on limited time schedule. He did say he loved Raw, and Cody's promo was a perfect response to any criticism people might have had of him. But we'll have him on Friday on SmackDown. So my false advertising of him was not intentional, but he did only had a two-hour window to wait on hold here. So
he's going to be co-hosting Saturday?
He's either going to call in or co-host. That's still yet to be finalized, but he did say we'll be talking one way or another Friday. So we'll have him on the show.
If he's co-hosting, I'm calling in for sure. I'm not going to say what I can do to the people around me, because that you know, might be used against me in a court of law.
Do it.
Well, now you've made yourself an accomplice. I do want to bring up what Cody seems to unintentionally have buried Seth Rollins and the title.
In what way?
During his promo, he says the reason that he dresses and talks and walks the way he does is because he acts like the champion because the champion isn't here. And I'm like, you're on Raw right now.
Yes.
It's like, and it's the messed up thing. It didn't strike me at the moment. Yep. So it's like, ooh.
He should have said the guy who fancies himself the ultimate champion or the undisputed champion. Left out a couple key word qualifiers there. So
you know that
Seth knew that.
It was unintentional, but you know, it was unintentional. But the fact that I didn't catch it and it wasn't obvious at the moment because it felt so natural for him to say that the champion's not here, and you're like, and Rollins out of the picture, which tells you that having that extra title is kind of like, you know, he's not the real champion. The real champion is Roman Reigns. So, you know, going to what Todd's always talking about, that, you know, if you have, you know, too many championships, you don't really have a champion.
Yes. Javier, do you want to hit a couple emails since we won't have time to talk to Jason from Australia?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So Zach in Texas said, gentlemen, I normally write in to rag on Cody, so I felt like I needed to write in and give him his props for a change. It's amazing how much difference not having a suit coat on makes. He just looked less stuffy and more relaxed. The promo itself was really good. He actually came across as a real person for a change and didn't mention Dusty Rhodes once. He effectively refuted the politician take from Friday with one caveat. It did take him 3 days to craft that response. All he had to do was listen to my post-show Friday. I had it for him, and he did it. So, and I've been talking how long about wanting I mentioned on Friday about, like, shots of the outside of the arena and the city and all that, and then Friday I mentioned I want a shot of fans in the concourse.
You got it.
I said that Friday. We got it today. So, I mean, I know people listen. I hear from people who listen in WWE, but that is a fast turnaround for a very, very specific.
Wade secretly programming Roth.
You know, I tried for like 3 years to get AEW to follow like one of my production suggestions. And here with WWE, it's like a 3-day turnaround. Well, anyway, if I had anything to do with it, great. If I didn't, great minds think alike, and we'll just leave it there. So it says, he effectively refuted the politician take from Friday with one caveat. It did take him 3 days to craft the response. That's very politician-like. It's like he went back to his handlers and they worked up a good response, or he listened to the post show. I just wish he wasn't carefully curated Cody and could think on his feet faster. He's not going to be able to match the raw, natural, infectious energy of Will Ospreay, but it doesn't have to come across like he precisely planned every word. I also have to say CM Punk served no purpose tonight. He made an oblique reference to a guy who could be indicted any day now on federal sex trafficking charges, and he's going to do commentary on, quote, night 4 of a buy one, get one free extravaganza, as he described WrestleMania, when he had any scruples at all. He should just stay home and heal. His body doesn't need the stress of the trip to the arena. I think he'll be fine, Zach. It's just an arm injury.
I knew I would find something that I would agree with Zach on.
Yes, you're enjoying that one. Okay, Punk did not serve no purpose tonight. To use a double negative, he served a purpose. Come on.
Yeah, no, I'm
you're playing into it.
Halfway joke.
Yeah. The comment about Vince was not approved, but also not seen as a big deal, I'm told. By the way, I text during the show sometimes.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I don't think it's like Vince's persona non grata. It's like, any, you know, obviously. You know, I think everybody handled it well, but it was probably an ill-advised comment, but they also just kind of steered away from it quickly enough, and it's not a big deal. That's my understanding from a couple people who are privy to the reaction to that. I mean...
And it was opaque enough where it's not going to, you know...
To a degree, I don't know, was it?
Well, I mean, to the general audience, is what I'm saying.
Yes. I mean, still, but nevertheless, I mean, you don't, what you don't want is you want CM Punk to be CM Punk, you know, like you want happy, creatively, excited CM Punk to be that, to not have, feel like he's on a short leash and has to stay within certain, you know, narrow parameters. And with that comes, you know, it's like with Cody, with giving him a little freedom, he's going to stray off script. He's going to stray a little too far and go a little too meta. Oh, people in the back are mad that I'm not staying on topic. It's like, when it comes across as I'm trying to get myself over by being more honest than everybody else is allowed to be, it sort of feels unfair, you know? You're trying to be a little too cute by half with your fans, but going, hey, I'm not the one who's going to work you. You all know it's a show. It's like Cody goes that way more than I think he needs to and ought to. It's part of his charm, but it's like a little tiny bit goes a long way of that. With Punk, it's like it's his brand. I mean, you want to watch Punk and think not he's abiding by all the guidelines. You want to think he's causing Triple H and a couple other, you know, lackeys on headset to be like, oh no, what's he going to say next? That's his brand. And so, this accomplished that.
Well, yeah, so his brand is, let's see if the car wrecks.
I get what you're saying. Yeah. Yes, that's part of it, but is Punk going to make management uncomfortable by being more real than they want any of their wrestlers to be? And I don't know how well that works with today's WWE brand, because people just love the brand right now more than they did. I mean, you listen to our 5 and 10 years ago flashbacks, and it's like crazy how much more positive people are about WWE now. It's still Punk's brand, even if he doesn't have a bad boss and bad company to be pushing back against.
To be fair, I would have been surprised if he didn't bring it up.
Yes, exactly. By the way, Jason from Australia confirmed as co-host for Friday. So I can announce that, Javier. So you'll also be calling it, sounds like.
Yes, yes.
Cool.
Assuming we're all here.
Yeah. Yes, if all goes well, as we say.
Todd taught me a few things on the fix. So.
Yeah. I will say I get co-credit for that. He brought it up, but I have stayed with it.
Yeah.
I made sure it doesn't go away. Okay. JB from Detroit, multiple points here. We'll zip through them and then sign off. Hi team, it's JB from Detroit. Pat McAfee yelling, he's your boss, to Cole, and it's the final boss for about a minute straight really took away from the Rock Cody stare down. McAfee taking over a situation that calls for silence is becoming a regular occurrence. Pat also says that Rock, quote, is playing chess while everyone else is playing checkers. How would one take that away? How would one take that away from that particular interaction? Well, Rock was on his show, and Pat McAfee is a shill. The part that I thought was fun about McAfee is he was talking about how how did he put it? He was talking about, like, powerful people being oblivious to not being right about things or something like that. I'm trying to find my notes on this as I talk. Do you remember him going off on that?
No.
I could sit here and find – refresh my memory, but the show will crawl to a halt. But Javier, talk about McAfee and the journey we've been on with him for the past couple months.
It feels like it was almost like the same like pattern I had with him in the first case, where it was it is refreshing because he gets into the stuff that he's doing, so I like that part of it. I think he does go over the top a lot. I mean, that's kind of what you expect with, you know, his amped up personality. What I at first noticed was that he was not getting reined in enough, and I was wondering if that had to do with the change in management and, you know, behind the scenes management, that, you know, that they were giving him more of a leash. And I'm like, no, you got to pull some back on that. He did, like, you know, there was some, you know, bad habits that Cole also, you know, developed, because he felt like he was going more along with it when he should have been pulling back a little bit more. The last 2 weeks have felt like they've kind of more settled into things. The other thing I'm not super – I mean, maybe I'm on my own on this one. I'm not super, like, cool with is bringing back the Telestrator thing, because it was cute the first time around, and I liked it the first time around. But bringing it back now, and particularly since they brought it back after he had already been there for a bit, it's almost like someone say, hey, I remember this from you know, Pat McAfee part one. Now that we're doing the sequel, well, we got to bring this back too. And that's like a bad thing for sequel. If you just bring back something because it was kind of cute the first time, and the second time around, you're not really doing much with it. I'm still kind of on the fence with the whole Telestrator thing. But overall, like I'm between, yeah, because I haven't had time, Jeff talked, I like the current setup of the commentating teams slightly better than I liked it before. It's not a big change, but it's just slightly better, particularly the last 2 weeks, like I said, because it feels like he's been more on, you know, more held back, you know, more held back. The big thing that was what's his face was the thing he fell in love with the Shayna Baszler, what is it, tap, nap, or crap. And, yeah. You know, he kept saying that over and over again. And, like, last time they caught him on the first time, but then this time he did it for a few times. And so they finally caught him, and then he went from crap to nap. And at least the fecal stuff is kind of, you know, for the most part, died down, sort of.
Yes. Sometimes he just seems like an overexcited fifth grader in an adult body who doesn't understand the tone that is, you know, ideally set. Okay, here's the thing. It was during the Ivy Nile Candice LeRae match. It was very brief. And McAfee said, he's talking about Candice LeRae being the worst person on earth, and Indy Hartwell still hanging out with her. And he goes, you don't want to be friends with the worst person on earth because of guilt by association. He said, the problem with society is the worst people on earth win, so they think they're doing right. And I'm like, I don't listen to his podcast, so I could be off on this. But my impression of his podcast is it's a lot of the worst people on earth who think they're doing right because of sycophants like him who worship them in order to get listens. And so I thought that was a little bit of a unself-aware moment by him on commentary.
I don't listen to his podcast, so the only
well,
the only
I think of the Aaron, Rodgers thing and his demeanor when Rock was on, and he's just such a celebrity sycophant in certain instances, but especially the
I think the only one I saw was the one with Vince McMahon.
Okay, yeah. All right, let's see. We'll wrap up with. Or we are still wrapping up with this email. I also really think they need to dump the Final Boss nickname in general. I'm still not really sure what it means. Well, Javier, what do you think about that? Is it a legit leverage move by The Rock to try to go, well, I'll say you're the Tribal Chief, but I'm going to come up with Brian Gewirtz and I are going to come up with an even bigger name. And there's like legit resentment over the fact that Rock wedged that in. Or is this like a brilliant way to set up next year's WrestleMania main event where it's the Final Boss versus the Tribal Chief on the posters or some third option?
It's weird because this almost feels like, you know how like sometimes our nicknames feel like for wrestlers come, you know, show up from committee. This sounds good. That almost feels like it came from committee because Final Boss has been used a lot recently. I'm assuming the emailer doesn't play many games, but Final Boss is the Final Boss you fight in the game, and it's normally the hardest one to beat. And once you beat them, that's it. You conquered everything. That's been making the rounds a lot in, you know, social media and people saying, you know, oh, he's the Final Boss of this. He's, you know, this 20-pound burger is the Final Boss of burgers, you know, that kind of stuff. And the fact that they gave it to The Rock kind of felt like they said, oh, you know, he's the Final Boss of wrestling. But that's the thing. It feels like it came more from the marketing department instead of something that him or Gewirtz would have come up with. That's what I find particularly weird by this, because it feels more like he's, instead of creating something new, he's glomming onto something that already exists.
Yeah. All right. Then three, is it odd that WWE is advertising Miz against Daniel Bryan for the Rival show on A&E on Sunday, now that Bryan has been with AEW for some time? I think WWE is in a position of feeling confident and they want content for their shows. And I also think they think Bryan Daniels is not making a big difference for AEW right now, having good matches, but sort of self-indulgent, non-mainstream expanding, you know, audience expanding matches. In AEW, I don't think they have like a lot to fear from him at this point in terms of getting him back into the picture a little bit. Javier?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. And I think also they show him where they think that he was at his highest. I think also, you know, benefit. Hey, look, this is what he was. Now he's over like in there.
Yeah.
That might be a mentality.
Is Punk calling Seth a dipshit really productive for the bigger picture? And what's going to happen at Mania? I don't know. I mean, you can like two people who don't like each other, can't you?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have that much problem with him, saying these two, you know, beliefs outside of the fact that like, I mean, there was a lot of cursing in this episode, and because I think Drew responded with, "Hey, PG Punk," and I was thinking, like, you know, with the Yank Fest from earlier, I'm like, well, we left that boat sailed a while ago, so I can't really blame him on that. But you know, it's one of those cases where, like, you know, The Rock gets to swear and Cody gets to swear so I guess I get to swear, and it's like, well, if everybody, every wrestler gets to swear, they'll all be able to get over.
Right. Yeah. Michael Cole framing Vinci as a big test for Andrade probably isn't the best way to have Andrade perceived so new in his return to WWE, considering Vinci has basically been treated as slightly higher than a jobber as a singles act. Yeah, I mean, that's just an unnecessary announcer hyperbole.
Yeah, I think we're trying to make up for the fact that Ivar wasn't available, and I think Ivar has been, just because of his size, he's already protected.
Yeah. Where is the Andrade Judgment Day courtship going? Is this possibly how we'll finally get Priest turning face, probably using the briefcase? I mean, yeah, obviously they've got a story arc in mind here, and it's not Andrade joins the group and everybody coexists happily forever. I just don't know how fast they go to Andrade taking over control and others following them. But I think it's a fun story arc, and so far, I mean, they're using Andrade well as sort of an undercurrent background story. You know, it's not something they're leaning heavily on, but they're laying the groundwork for something that I think fans will care more about than, you know, most other things I think they could be doing with Andrade at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I've been predicting the end of the Judgment Day for about 2 years now, so I stopped.
Yeah. Yeah. But Andrade being used well, do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been used poorly, so I guess that means he's been used well. It feels like he's just like in a holding pattern. See what happens afterwards.
Well, to me, a holding pattern is just like go out, have good matches, and have some card with a feud with a mid-carder. And instead, they have him like immersed in a storyline with a faction that's had more TV time on Raw the last 6 months than anybody else. I mean, it just seems like they're putting thought into him, and you know, Paul Levesque still trying to make up for.
Less than holding pattern. Let me rephrase that with the introduction phase. Is that why I would have wrestled Ivar and this guy who has no connection to, is just, you know, introduce him to the audience. I think, which I think is a great idea. Just, you know, he's big enough to be talking to these people, and then let's also see what he can do in the ring too.
Yeah, I like both Sammy and Gable a lot, but it doesn't seem a bit backwards that Gable should be the one coaching Sammy. Sammy's had far more success than Gable as an individual wrestler in WWE from a storyline perspective. I mean, I think you can have some of the best coaches in sports are not Hall of Famers. And you know, Gable seems like, you know, his gimmick is he's been a coach. It's been more comedic. But Gable also seems like he's a little more – it's weird saying this about his character because he's been doing comedy, but it feels like when he gets serious, he can be a little more level-headed and intellectual, academic about the approach to things, and Sammy is always just nervous and fretting over things. So I think personality-wise, it matches up that maybe Gable is a good voice to help Sammy at the stage, or at least it's a believable concept.
Yeah, and it could always be that he's going to mold Zane into something dark for his own purposes. If they decide to, you know, make Gable a heel and create a program there. So,
but
you
want the beginning of it, the foundation to be believable before they get to that, is my point.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, and that's the thing. He's been the coach, and I mean, ignore your lying eyes, but supposedly he's made What's-Her-Face into a decent wrestler, or a possible wrestler, you know.
All right, and finally, the main event picture continually seems to be more about Cody versus Rock than Cody versus Roman. I think that this lapse in focus might truly hurt Cody after Mania when he finally has a title, unless they immediately transition to Cody against Rock, but I don't really see that as likely to happen. Also, Rock's constant random references to Mama Rose seems weird. I was not a fan of the show closing segment as being productive or a net positive. As always, love the show and go VIP. That's where I think it's just had a minute more than it needed. Maybe 90 seconds more than it needed. Like, I think they could have done a shorter beatdown, and it did feel like, you know, someone was just doing the stretch symbol with their hands, with their fingers, like, stretch it out. We got a little more time than we expected. So that's my only critique, but I mean, I mean, Cody sort of refuted the whole Mama Rose thing by saying, you know, she's the one to, you know, pick a fight. It felt like a true story. You know, she picked a fight with an undercover security guy at the last concert she went to. Like, so what Cody said sort of took away a little bit that she's going to be phased by blood on a belt. What do you think about the Mama Rose inclusion?
No, I mean, I like it because it's, you know, a way to make it personal for the audience that, you know, he's going after his mom and he's still like on it and he's fixated with that idea of, he's trying to hurt him where it hurts, even though, you know, Cody did say, you know, what he said, he's showing that what he had, The Rock showed that what he had said was not just bluster, that he's so vile that he's actually going to go ahead and go through it, go through with it.
Javier, anything else you want to sneak in before we sign off here?
Just a quick thing on the Becky. My thing on why I think she could go heel is less because she's not working, and I think it's more because it'll help Rhea Ripley if she gets involved in a actual real personal relationship, a real personal feud with Becky Lynch for, like, you know, between now and like SummerSlam, for long period of storytelling between the two of them. It's more to help Ripley as a babyface than it is to, you know, fix anything that might be wrong with Becky.
I just realized I skipped over JB's comment on Becky, and since you brought her up, I'll read this and you can respond. Are they trying to tell the same story as Becky not giving Rhea her full attention as they are with Seth and not giving Drew his full attention heading into Mania? This story seems to be kind of all over the place by bringing Becky's daughter into the story, which in turn made Becky bring up her father when none of this had ever been previously mentioned about her family. And now we're just 2 weeks before Mania. I do think it was smart to have Becky attack Dom. Any reaction to that, Javier?
Well, I mean, that's what I was talking about, that she feels like she has this frantic energy and she's spiraling. That's why it feels like she might end up being turning heel, because it's something that – I mean, and she's already playing it like she's already passed her peak.
You know,
by saying that, you know, I'm no longer the flavor of the month. You know, I'm no longer the new hot shiny object. I'm no longer, you are, and then you don't know what it is to lose that. It feels the story. I think the biggest problem with the story is that it kind of feels a little bit inauthentic. Like, you know, she doesn't really feel that way. You know, the character doesn't feel like she's like, you know, broken old news. That's almost a story I could see Trish coming back and doing. You know, but so it feels a little bit accelerated for the Becky Lynch character. But, you know, I can see where that might, you know, where that might be what they're going there. I can see that might be where they're going with it.
Yeah. Sounds good. Javier, thanks. Sorry to keep you so long.
I got to wake up in like 3 hours.
Time just flew by, though.
I am not sleeping. I'm not sleeping tonight. I was not planning on it. So make sure everything. Oh, I do have a question for you. What do you think with Rick? Ricochet is like all of a sudden come out of nowhere. So are they just building him up to like have him lose somebody important later on? Or do you think that, you know, maybe he ends up being the one who beats Gunther if Gunther survives Zayn?
I think it's Ricochet being a guy they know that can give you a nice long match that with high spots, and he's our high spot guy. I'm not reading as into it as much as you are.
Yeah. Well, or like, is he going to be like a gatekeeper for somebody to beat?
Par for the course. Par for the course. That's what he is, and that's what he'll continue to be. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just you know, I'm not expecting anything more than him being utilized nicely as a, you know, barely upper mid card high spot guy who kind of like he's a babyface version of Shinsuke. You know, every casual fan thinks he has a chance to win, and on occasion he does. But you're going to get a good match, you know, an exciting match every time.
Yeah,
I don't think the things holding him back are going to change either dramatically. That's going to lead to, like, I don't think they're going to give him a whatever going there. But if they do, gloat, Javier.
Well, I'm not predicting it. I'm just saying.
I've got it marked down.
Great.
On your bingo card.
It's not like if I'm wrong that much on my I'm done. That's it. Good night.
We're done. Thanks, Javier. Thanks, listeners. Thanks, outside correspondent. Thanks, callers. We'll talk to y'all next time.